Well, hello there, wonderful teachers. I want to invite you to an event we're doing this summer. It's in Cincinnati, Ohio, so you have to be able to make it there, but it might be worth traveling for if you're able to. It's happening on July 20th and 21st, so that's over a weekend, and it's going to be the best 2 days for teachers. We're going to have a ton of fun. We're going to learn a lot about pedagogy and creative teaching and business. We have two fabulous guest speakers, and we're even going to finish with an optional Ceilidh. That's an Irish dancing party. So I hope you'll be able to join me. Just go to vibrantmusicteaching.com/turbo. That's .com/TURBO24. The numbers 24. I hope you'll check it out. View all the details there, and I hope to see you in Cincinnati in July. On with the episode.
Vibrant
music teaching.
Proven and practical
tips,
strategies,
and ideas
for music teachers.
You're listening to the Vibrant Music Teaching Podcast. I'm Nicola Canton, and in this episode, we're talking recital preparations with Carmen Carpenter. So today, beautiful teachers, we're joined by Carmen Carpenter, who's one of the staff writers and editors at Vibrant Music. We're chatting about how to make prepping for performance fun. Imagine that, Carmen, fun prep.
Right? I think some people think that those are mutually exclusive, right? Preparation and fun do not go together. But yes, they definitely can. And, you know, in my mind, they just make it better and stickier and more likely to lessen nerves, you know, and anxiety for a lot of kids if they're having fun in the process.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think for many teachers, we have a lot of type A teachers. So many of them will be like, yes, obviously preparation is fun. But for some of our students, it might not seem though. So let's talk about how we make it fun and how we make the whole recital seem theme fun. That's a slip of the tongue right there. Seem fun with themes. That's how that happened.
Fun themes. I think that's a great place to start, particularly if your pattern has just been to have a everybody play your best piece kind of recital. I do think that if you pick a fun theme, everybody has more fun, and it could be animals. Animals seems to be pretty popular, and kids do kind of generally love animals. They all seem to have some favorite animal, whether it is a shark or a tiger or a sloth. They all have something that they like. So animals are always a fun way to go. I think doing composition recitals is also pretty popular. And I think that for your students that need that outlet of creativity, that really helps. I think it also helps them. I've had many students who would much prefer to play their own music, mostly because they have control over it. They feel like they can polish it and prepare it and make it sound the way they want much better than something I've assigned. So composition recitals are good for that. Pop is always fun to do. And if you want to go over the top, you could get guitar, bass, drums, or whatever you want to go along with it. And I know some folks do that. I have never tried that, but I certainly am a fan of that.
Yeah, I think that would be super fun, especially for teachers who have a lot of older students. I think you do need to be a certain age to maybe people can argue this with me, but for me, I think you need to be, you know, 9 and up to really appreciate playing with a guitar and drums and not be put off by that. Like for our youngest students, because we have a lot of young kids in our studio, for a 4-year-old, just getting them used to the idea of what a recital is going to be like at all is enough. Like the clapping is going to be loud and all of that stuff. If they haven't been in that context before, I think drums would be too much. But I think for teens and preteens, it's super fun. Yeah.
Oh, definitely. I agree. It can be overwhelming. And yes, and that's part of the reason we want to keep it fun. If you have a studio of mostly younger students, and I'm in that camp too, they feel overwhelmed by the whole thing. You know, just sitting on the bench is a win for them.
Yeah.
You know, and I have some like that, and I have one right now whose mom told me that she would never play in front of people, ever. And she's six. I have group lessons, and we always have a share time, and she has shared. And I always tell her mom, hey, she performed in front of her friend today. And so I think those situations too. And that can be a fun way to perform. That's not a true recital, but it is a performance.
It is, yeah. And it's a great way to work towards recitals or just fun in its own right. I wonder, not to psychologically analyze this mum from very far away without knowing her, but do you think any of it is she would be terrified to perform? Because sometimes, no, okay. Sometimes those kids who say they won't do a concert, I'm like, and like I didn't get to talk about it with them first, I'm like, is this really from you? Or did your mom describe it in a certain way?
Right. No, I agree with you that that definitely can happen. But no, she is a singer.
Okay.
She actually sang with me. We did a Christmas thing in a store. So speaking of like fun themes, this isn't a fun theme, it's a different venue. We did a open house for a local gift shop kind of store. She helped fill in some of the time gaps with singing, and I played for her. And so that's another fun way to go. I do think when you play Christmas favorites, if that's something that most of your students celebrate, that's another fun thing, because I mean everybody wants to know how to play Jingle Bells and Rudolph.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, lots of fun themes are possible. I mean, you can, and I've done this before even for game themes and stuff, if you just look up like kids party themes, those are all relevant for recitals pretty much.
Right.
And there's a lot more suggestions out there from like mom blogs and stuff, so I think that's a good way to go. This year in my studio we're doing a very simple theme of colors, so every student is just playing a piece with a color in it and they're wearing that color. Also, if they don't want to wear that color, that's fine by me. I'm pretty loose on my themes. Like if they're gonna get, I have said specifically to the parents, don't go buy outfits in this color. It's like, it's very loose. They can just wear one item in that color if they don't have it. But for some of them, that's really fun. And if it's not, they don't have to go too far with it. Or on a bigger scale, we did our silent film almost recital. I called it a festival last year, and we're hopefully doing that again next year. So I think was the most fun performance from the feedback I've gotten for the parents. They really enjoyed that they had something to watch, and like, not that they don't enjoy watching kids play, but it really added an extra element to them, and I think they genuinely had a good time versus appreciating performances.
Oh, I agree. When you do something other than have everybody just sit down and play their pieces and just roll through it, you will definitely get a better parent response. Yeah. Like the gift store that we did, I got lots of great feedback on that. And generally speaking, I don't get much. So
I get a lot of thank yous, but not usually a lot of like, wow, that was amazing, do that again, you know?
Yes. Totally. And I find as a teacher, from my perspective, I watch the kids and I'm like, oh, look at what so-and-so did. Look at how well they played. And I am just floored. And I really expect somebody else to notice.
But they didn't see all the work that went into that. I mean, most of them. Right. So, yeah.
And, you know, they don't have context, right? They don't have like, oh my gosh, think of where so-and-so was last year and where they are now, and they don't really notice. The only other time I've had a really good response on just a normal recital was after the shutdowns, our first live performance. And we were still like wearing masks. I still had to do like four different times so the room wasn't too full, you know, and all of that business. But oh my gosh, so many people were like, thank you for doing this live. They were just so glad to be out again, right? So that, you can't bank on that anymore though.
No, now it's all busy, busy, busy again. And yeah. Okay, so that's looking forward to the recital and how to make the whole idea of it fun. But we know a guarantee for making it feel not fun to a student is if they're not prepared for their actual piece. So, and we need to put a lot of work into recital pieces to bring them up to the level. Whether you do it like me and you pick out a piece usually that they've already done, or is at an easier level, you know, you're not pushing them, or whether it is like a big stretch piece. Either way, you have to put a lot of work in to bring it up to performance standard. So how can we make that process fun, Carmen?
Well, I think that probably using your fun practice strategies is a great way to do that. Whether it's just teaching them how to chunk their pieces so that it's a small process, step-by-step process, rather than a big, here's your recital piece, go for it, right? And just kind of chunking that up, I think really helps. So an interleaved approach really helps. And then just, I love using the practice place. I feel like I say that almost every time. So I do use those so much. I love using crossing the river, which is really simple,
yeah.
But they still enjoy getting their little things out there to move across, doing things like that to help them really polish the piece. And I am like you, I do pick things they've already played. Like we have been this week, in fact, when they come in, I'm like, what are you thinking? And I call them learning celebrations. That's sort of my way to get around some of the angst around recital. And so I'm like, what do you want to play? And it's usually something that, yes, they loved, they played it well already, but we have to repolish it. You know, we have to bring it out again. Or then I have somebody who yesterday had found, I have a big stack of leftover paper or old sheet music that has the backs are white, so scratch paper. So my siblings that come, I'm like, you can grab paper, draw, whatever. Well, somebody had found a piece, they had found the first page of Feelin' Blue. I think it's Feelin' Blue from Jennifer Eklund. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I have the studio license, and so I have old sheets in there. He had learned on his own that first page of Feelin' Blue. So he's like, this is what I want to play. And I'm like, what? Okay, you know, he had, and he had worked out the whole first page himself, and it's very pattern based.
Yeah.
But I mean, it was an impressive effort. Mm. I mean, I was like, well, okay, that's what we're gonna play. And so when they're like that, you know, you have to capitalize on that too. When they're excited about it, and then you capitalize on that and really encourage that, you know, keep at it. Independence. I mean, wow, you learned that without my help. That is something right there. But anyway, back to the fun ways to prepare. Grab old music from your teeth.
Pretend you're not including the old music. Like, just set it off to the side, have them draw on it, and maybe they'll, like, that sounds reliable. Yeah.
Right. Well, we'll see what happens on page two, because page two, it gets a little bit trickier in the right hand. But anyhow, we'll see. But so I think that practice strategies definitely help to make the process go much more smooth and much more fun. Using games, just all of that. Mount Memory is one that we use some too, although I just use it as a practice and polish tool instead. I don't actually require memorization, generally speaking, although some of them do. And one of the things I've been doing, somebody said this, I think, at the practice symposium about turning their music over. So you're reading it upside down. Was that you?
I don't remember.
I feel like somebody said that. Maybe it's in one of my little huddles. But I have started doing that, and they get the biggest kick out of that. But it's amazing, because what happens is they may or may not actually read the music when it's upside down.
So you're having them read the music that's upside down? Like, that's the idea? Okay. I thought we were talking about, like, maybe turning it upside down to see if they even notice. Because you know how some students, they do, like, they prefer memorizing. They actually don't like reading from the score at all. And they'll put it up on the stand and just, like, not look at it at all. So I was wondering if you meant just put it up upside down and see if they even notice.
Well, you know, I do have some that, yes, would never notice.
Yeah.
I'm amazed when you have, like, flashcards for the games, how many of them don't turn them right side over with the treble clef on top, and they read the notes like that. And I'm like, you might want to turn that over the right way. But you know when I do it is when they start making silly mistakes. Mm-hmm. They're playing a piece that they kind of already know pretty well, and they start making silly mistakes. It's sort of a way to re-engage the brain.
Right.
you know, and you turn it over, and some of them will be like, oh my gosh, what, wait, I don't know. And then I'm like, give it a try. Let's just see what happens. And then they play it, and then they play it well. Mm-hmm. They play it better than they did before because suddenly they've re-engaged.
Yeah.
That's a fun one.
Yeah. I'm sure some people will try that now this week and just see what happens. Yeah. So whether you do require memorization or you don't, I think we have a lot of different practice games and strategies and tools and whatever you want to call them. That is really just a way to keep mixing things up so that things don't go stale, whether in their perception of the piece, like they're just bored of it, or their actual playing going stale because they know it too well, too early kind of thing. So things to keep things fresh. How do we deal then? How do we keep it fun when our students start mentioning or start showing signs of getting really nervous or anxious about performing?
You know, I do some of these same things, right? When they start to do, they start to mention that they feel nervous or things like that. Certainly try to be encouraging, and I try to tell them, you know, you're so well prepared, you're going to do great. You know, I do the usual things like that. One of the conversations that I like to have when they get worried and nervous is, what are you concerned about? A lot of times they'll say things like, I had one the other day who's playing Hot Potato from Fired Up. She was a little concerned about actually introducing her piece and saying that she was playing a piece called Hot Potato, as though that wasn't cool enough.
Oh.
Which was really interesting. And because she's in sixth grade, so she's like 12-ish.
Yeah.
I didn't think much of that. I guess she thinks of it maybe as like kind of a little kiddie game. Do you play a game called Hot Potato in Ireland?
Yeah, I'm somewhat familiar with it. I don't think we played it growing up. I think I've just heard of it from the U.S., but yeah, it is interesting that Jennifer chose to put that as a piece title in Fired Up, because I guess it is a little kid's game.
I guess.
Yeah.
So she was all worried about it, and I was kind of like, but I think that for the audience, they'll only think it's weird if you make it weird.
Yeah.
You know, if you act weird when you say it or act embarrassed about saying it. If you just say I'm playing Hot Potato, they'll just think, oh, that's the name of the piece.
Yeah.
And so I think a lot of times that self-talk of what they think other people are thinking, and I remind them, but is that what you think when you're an audience member? Mm-hmm. Do you think that way? They're like, oh, no. And I said, do you ever laugh at people when they make a mistake? I mean, is that something you do? And they're like, no. I think helping them work through their self-talk.
Yeah, and I think it is really important to ask them what it is they're worried about. Because we can make these big assumptions. A student says they're nervous for a recital, and then we kind of put words in their mouth and say, oh, are you afraid you're going to make a mistake? Are you afraid you're going to do this? Mm-hmm. And now we're giving them new ideas of things to be worried about. And actually, all she was worried about was the name Hot Potato, you know? So we do need to ask an open-ended question to make sure we're talking about the right thing. I do, when students answer that they are worried they're going to play a wrong note or something, I don't remember who said this to me, or not to me. Like, I think I heard it in a podcast or something. I can't remember which teacher it was, though, but I borrowed this idea. So what do you think is going to happen when you make a mistake? And they're like, I don't know. You say something like, well, the ground is going to open and then this fiery pit is going to be below you and it's just going to swallow you up and then you'll never see anyone again. You know, just something ridiculous.
Right.
And then you both have a giggle and you go, what will actually happen? And they're like, nothing. I'm like, yeah, nothing.
Right.
Nothing's going to happen.
Absolutely.
And I go further. I'm like, you will know and I will know and basically no one else will know. That's what's going to happen.
Absolutely. Yes, I say that. I say the ground will open up and swallow you. I do say that one. But you gave it a whole new flair.
Yeah, usually it depends on the student. I don't want to be too scary.
Yes.
But if I know they'll take it as a joke, I do go a bit further.
Oh, yeah. And your age and all that. But yes, definitely. Yeah, I really try to emphasize keeping on. So when I do Crossing the River, if they are a student who will just stop every single time they make a mistake, I'm like, okay, you get to cross the river if you play through the mistake.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of trying to get them to play perfectly to move their little piece over to the other side, I say, okay, if you play through your mistake and finish the section, then we will move it over. And that kind of helps, because it is hard for them to understand that when they make a mistake, generally, if they play a wrong note, people don't notice.
Yeah, but what people do notice is if there are five beats in a bar, even people who don't play music, like they're so comfortable in 4/4, they feel it.
Yeah, we talk about that too. I'm like, people, when we're in the process, not like when we're, you know, trying to get it ready for recital, but as we're getting there, we do have that conversation about people don't notice wrong notes, wrong pitches. They notice wrong rhythm. They will notice if you're not playing with a steady beat. They will notice, yes, if you have five beats in a measure or you take a long pause and stop at every bar line. They're going to know that.
Yeah, they'll feel it. They might not know what's going on. Like, they might not have the vocabulary, but they know something wasn't quite right in that performance. Yeah, similarly with those students who tend to backtrack. It's about getting them used to that performance mode. So we have to decide, okay, we're going into performance mode now. We're not fixing anything. And I will sometimes just count. So I'll have them play their whole piece and count the number of times they backtrack and tell them the result at the end. Like, okay, so we did 13 times. You went back and forth that time. What number should we aim for this time? So we're just trying to reduce it a bit each time. And, you know, they'll say, oh, 10. And they'll probably get it down to like 5 straight away just by having that goal of doing it fewer times. So yeah, that can be useful too. So I guess the final stage then to get ready and make sure the recital is going to be fun is to do some run-throughs or rehearsals, whatever you want to call them. How'd you do that in your studio, Carmen?
Well, I will usually have a group lesson in that same range of time. And so we, like I said, usually share during our group lesson time. So that's a good way to do a run through. I will, sometimes I have used the performance party workshop, but sometimes it's just a portion of the group lesson instead of the focus of it. Mm. So that's a good practice for a lot of them to play for their friends and to just feel what it feels like to sit in front of people who are watching you do something, you know, so that is good for them. So we will do that. Sometimes we use those distractor. Is that what it's called? Yes. They love that. They love to like get in front of their phones.
Yeah.
And do crazy things. And they think that's a hoot. And they think it's fun too. It's almost like the staring game. They really like to keep going even when somebody's trying to make them laugh or whatever. And so that one is a really fun one to do. But yeah, that's what we do. So that's kind of the run through would be a group lesson. And I think that too, getting them together with the idea that you're going to have a snack at the end is a lot of motivation to relieve those nerves too.
Yeah.
So I would definitely suggest that as a run through. And I am not one to rent the fancy recital hall. This year, the hall that I have been using has sold. So I actually had to rework it. And I'm going back to something I did when I very first moved here and only had like 5 or 6 students. I'm doing living room concerts. And
so
you're going to play in my living room. I think that's a fun other kind of maybe theme, but also helping to relieve the nerves. They're used to my house, so it feels comfortable.
Yeah, I think that's great. Our mid-year concert is always in my living room. Now I take all the furniture out and put in rows of chairs, so it's not like a salon, you know, it's not like a proper living room concert, but still it's a piano that they may have played before at a group lesson, and they've seen Tofu hanging out in there through the window, so Tofu is my dog, I should clarify, for those who don't know. They've just seen packets of tofu hanging out in there. No, Tofu is the name of my dog. Yeah, exactly. That's where we dry it. Yeah.
Easily do. We were talking about a run-through, and I kind of got off track because of the venue. So you could, I mean, if you needed to do a run-through at your recital hall, that could be good. But even that, you could make it fun by saying, yeah, when we're done, we're going to have pizza or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's great. I mean, I haven't been able to do like post-recital refreshments now for years, but the kids still ask about them.
Really?
They're like, are they going to be biscuits? Meaning cookies, right?
Right.
No, not this time. No, it's mostly because of the venues. So the venues that we've had more recently, like for our spring recital, we can't really do refreshments at any of the venues we've used. And then for the ones that we do here, it's mostly because we've more students now. So we now have like four back-to-back living room recitals, as it were, like the ones that I do here, small scale recitals. So to put refreshments in between is to make it just such a long day for me and the other teachers. So, but we do still have cookies or little snacks or things at some of the group workshops we do. But yeah, they still always ask about them when it come up to concerts.
They're about the food.
They
enjoy that.
Yeah, they're consistent with that. Okay, so finally, Carmen, what about for us then? We've been talking about making recitals fun for students and different ways we can do that. Do we get to have fun?
Well, I like to have fun. So, yeah, I mean, I think some ways to do that are to, yeah, get yourself a new outfit if you can. Just wear something that you love. This isn't your bathrobe, sorry. But, you know, just wear.
Unless you want to do a pajama recital and then wear your dressing gown, you know.
Yeah, I think that's a really good idea.
Yeah, we should do a pajama party one time, yeah.
Oh, yeah. You know, pajama day is a big deal in the schools around here. And so, yeah, pajama recital. Interesting. But anyway, so, yeah, I mean, I think get yourself a new outfit or get yourself a new planner, whatever, like, really, you know, float your boat and get you excited about doing it. Because I do think, especially for somebody like me who's been doing this a really long time, it can be hard to get excited about it. And my attitude can easily become, let's just get it over with.
Mm.
That's a very typical attitude on my part. To make it fun, you know, I can do things like, I'm going to buy a pretty new blouse to wear with those black pants that I've worn for every recital for the past 10 years, you know. So I think those are ways to make it fun for you. And usually I will say that in the moment, so even if my attitude going into it is one of like, let's just get this over with, I do almost always, and just so proud, you know, and just so pleased with what the kids do. And there's always that one that surprises you. Like, there's always that one that the lessons leading up, you're like, oh my gosh, so-and-so not gonna make it. And then they do it, and you're like, what the heck, where did that come from? So there's always that moment that, yes, makes it a joy and reminds you, this is why I do this, you know, this is good. That is fun too.
Yeah, I think affirming that to yourself. I just want to put out there, though, that if we have new teachers or even teachers who haven't done a lot of recitals who are listening and thinking, how could you possibly enjoy a recital? I'm just a nervous wreck. I do think that is the experience for the first several years, because there's so much logistics and you're kind of on edge because you're not sure if it's all going to come together. Mm-hmm. And it feels like it's going to be like the stakes are so high, even though they're not. Mm-hmm. It's a recital. Like, doesn't matter that much. Yeah. But for us, it feels like it does. So if you're still in that camp, we see you. Yes. We were there. It gets fun eventually.
Yes. I think, you know, my first, when I taught elementary school music, I would, of course, have to do big programs with the kids. And the first few, I was just a nervous wreck with those. And I remember another more experienced teacher telling me just what you said, that no one is as concerned about how the students do than you. Their parents are just happy to see them up there and they're proud, you know, and so nobody is as worried as you are, and they are appreciative of what you do and they are pleased and proud and excited just to see their kid doing that.
So. Absolutely. And in the nicest possible way, no one cares as much as we do about it. Like, no one is as invested because they might be coming there from a ballet recital and then going to a sports match afterwards. Like,
right.
And we often complain about that, but if we put it in context, that means they're not putting all this pressure on this one activity to go perfectly. And that's not their expectation. Right. They know what children are like, you know, they have them. So put things in perspective, but definitely find a way to make it fun for you. I love the planning your outfit suggestion, or if there's something that does make you nervous, like the recital speech or like some little aspect of it, see if one of your students can do that, or, you know, your spouse or your daughter. Mm-hmm. You know, it could be some of these things we can pass off to someone who's not a big deal to, and it could relieve the stress of the whole day. So
definitely. Absolutely. And possibly give someone a chance to do something that they haven't done and maybe they would like to, or maybe a student that isn't really ready to play yet, but is okay with speaking in public. That's another great way to include them.
Yeah. Love that suggestion. Okay, so I think this has been a great overview. We would love to hear about your recital processes. So do come join the conversation in our Facebook group, that's Vibrant Music Studio Teachers, or over on Instagram at Colourful Keys. We'll see you there. One of the awesome benefits for Vibrant Music Teaching members is that they get an exclusive member magazine every month. This magazine brings together our blog articles in a way that is digestible and super actionable. If you want to become a member and get the magazine as well as all the other benefits, you can go to vmt.ninja to sign up. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Vibrant Music Teaching Podcast. I hope you loved it, and I wanted to pop on here one more time to remind you about our event. It's happening in Cincinnati this July, and you can get all the details at vibrantmusicteaching.com/turbo. See you there.